Overhead Doors for its support of Focus 580. Overhead Doors is pleased to support public radio in Central Illinois on behalf of its customers and business associates. Today's programming is made possible by Parkland College Theater, presenting Sherlock's Last Case, a comic thriller centered around a death threat against the master detective by the son of his late nemesis, Professor Moriarty. Performances run from Wednesday, September 29th through Sunday, October 10th. For more information, call 351-2528. Programs on WILL are made possible with support from Sinfonia da Camera, presenting the Beaux-Arts Trio's Golden Anniversary on Saturday, October 9th at 7:30 p.m. in the Follinger Great Hall of the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. Sinfonia da Camera joins the Beaux-Arts Trio as they celebrate 50 years of performing. For more information, call 333-6280.
Good morning. This is Focus 580, our morning telephone talk show. My name is Jack Brighton. Glad you could listen today. Our producers are Harriet Williamson and Martha Deal and Jason Croft at the controls. On November 2nd, voters around Champaign-Urbana will have a choice of three candidates for the 103rd Illinois House District. This week on Focus 580, we managed to schedule conversations with all three candidates. It is our tradition, actually our mandate, to provide airtime for the candidates to speak on whatever issues they would like to address, to introduce themselves to the people we hope will be voting, and we hope you will be voting this November. More importantly, this is your chance to talk with each candidate about whatever issues most concern you. So please consider this as your chance to conduct a sort of job interview with the candidates and exercise your right not only to vote, but to engage in dialogue with the people who would represent you in public office. During this hour, Focus 580 will be talking with the Socialist Equality Party candidate of the 103rd Illinois House District, Tom Mackeman. He's a graduate student in the History Department at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, specializing in labor history, and has worked as both a teaching and research assistant. Tom is also a member of the Graduate Employees Organization here at the University of Illinois, and we'll talk with him during this hour. As we talk with Tom Mackeman, you are invited into the conversation. All you have to do is pick up the telephone, the number around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL if you match the letters with the numbers. We also have a toll-free line anywhere you can hear us, 800-222-9455. Your questions for the candidate are welcome. Tom Mackeman, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Well, maybe to start, could you tell us a bit about yourself, your background, and why you'd like to represent the 103rd House District?
I was born in Iowa and raised in Minnesota and came to Champaign, Illinois about 6 years ago now to study history as a graduate student. I'm married with a child, and the purpose of my running is to advance ideas that are not going to be found, not going to be espoused clearly by the two established parties, the Democrats and the Republicans, and to, in particular, to offer an alternative to working people and students on this campus.
Mm-hmm.
The Socialist Equality Party is the party which I'm running for, also running candidates for the national election, Bill Van Auken and Jim Lawrence. Unfortunately, in Illinois, you can't vote for them because Illinois has among the most restrictive ballot rules in the country, but you can write them in. Bill Van Auken has written extensively on Latin America. Jim Lawrence is a retired steel worker from Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
And the Socialist Equality Party publishes a daily newspaper called the World Socialist Website, and that's at wsws.org.
Okay. So what are some of the kind of things that the Socialist Equity Party stands for? Could you tell us more about the orientation of the kind of ideas and so forth?
Okay. Politically, we base ourselves on the working class as the social force that's going to be decisive in political affairs eventually. And our work is to our political interventions in these elections and the publication of the World Socialist Website is to lay the groundwork for the building of the mass party of the working class in the United States. Basically, if you could sum up the stance, it's a party that puts social needs above the accumulation of private profit.
Mm-hmm. I know there are different socialist parties around the world. Where does the Socialist Equality Party fit into that sort of constellation?
We have a strong international dimension in this party. We have sister parties or co-thinking parties, if you will, mm-hmm. in a number of different countries, including just off the top of my head, Canada, Great Britain, Germany, Australia, Sri Lanka. We stand in the tradition of the Russian Revolution, but not the turn it took when Stalin came to power in the 1920s. We were opposed to the sort of socialism in single countries that led to these enormous bureaucracies that became more and more dedicated to their own survival.
I think for a lot of people, the word Marxism comes to mind when we start talking about socialism. What do you think about the equation of that?
I think that should come to mind.
Okay.
And people would be well advised to study read the works of Marx. Today more than ever, they have a lot to tell people about the world in which they live.
Okay. I also wanted to ask you to talk about the hoops he had to jump through to get on the ballot. I know there was some opposition from the Democrats, at least, in getting your name on the ballot.
Right. To begin with, as I mentioned earlier, Illinois maintains very restrictive ballot access. So to gain ballot access, we were to collect 1,325 signatures. We got over 2,000 to give ourselves a comfortable buffer. Clearly, that represents a significant share of the. We live in a district that I believe comprises 100,000 people. I can't remember now the number of voters that is, but we're talking about a significant share of the district. But we did get over 2,000 signatures. And many of those people told us that, you know, they were looking for an alternative. Many people were very enthused about, you know, our stance defending social living standards in this country, the defense of basic civil liberties, and also our opposition to the war in Iraq. We submitted our signatures in June and found out shortly thereafter that the Democratic Party was claiming that they were bogus. We had state employees working under the orders of Speaker of the House Mike Madigan going through our petitions and striking perfectly legitimate signatures. We were able to show this. It was a long battle, and local Democratic functionaries were working to try and keep, basically, in some, it wasn't just an attack on us. It was an attack on these people who were signing our petitions. You know, they were saying these people are not registered voters, and we were able to prevail because clearly their objections to the petitions were bogus.
Did that take a lot of energy to try to?
Yes, it did. It was basically all we did. We weren't able to campaign in June and July. We had to work exclusively on defending our petitions, and this was clearly, you know, to the design benefit of Naomi Jacobson, the Democratic incumbent. She was beginning her campaign at the same time as we were poring over our petitions again and again to try to defend our right to ballot access and the rights of these local voters. You know, the attack on our petitions is very similar to the Republican attack on voters in Florida in the wake of the disputed 2000 election. The argument basically in both cases is, you know, these people don't have the right to vote. Maybe they didn't write their name in cursive, for example, on our petitions. Therefore, they don't have the right to vote. Or maybe they inverted a letter in their names, and therefore they don't have the right to vote. These were the kind of arguments that the Democratic Party, the party that claims to be the one that defends democratic rights, was advancing and trying to strip people of their right to put us on the ballot.
Okay. I want to talk about some issues, and we'll dive into that. We have lots of time, so I'm sure we'll do that. We do have a caller waiting, so why don't we include them in our conversation?
Okay, sure.
I always defer to them on these kind of programs. So this is a listener on line number 4 in Coles County. Good morning. Hello?
Yes, hello.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I just want to make a quick comment. I'm not really familiar with this particular party, and I don't know that I particularly necessarily agree completely with the party or this gentleman. But I did want to say, you know, when people like him run for office, and as far as I'm concerned, it gives the world hope for real change. And, you know, when you're talking about the Republican Party or even the Democratic Party there's not very much hope for real change for regular people, for working people in this society. And when people run on a party like this gentleman that you have, there's at least hope for some real change. And so I congratulate him very much for running and keeping hope alive. And that's all I have to say.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks for the call.
Okay.
I'd like to thank the caller, he's not alone in thinking that way. I can tell you from, you know, the thousands of conversations we had and gathering our petitions that people are ready for something, anything. A comment we very frequently heard when we said we were trying to, build a socialist party in this town and offer an alternative to the Democrats and Republicans. I don't know how many times I heard people say, well, anything's better than the two we got. this caller is in line with that sort of outlook, which is, I thank you. Thanks a lot.
Okay. We're talking this morning with Tom Mackeman. He is the Socialist Equality Party candidate for the 103rd Illinois House District, the district that comprises most of Champaign-Urbana here. And we're taking your questions for the candidate, 333-9455 around Champaign-Urbana. Elsewhere, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Well, let's talk about your main issues. What do you think are some of the most important issues facing the 103rd District, the state of Illinois, et cetera?
Okay. The issues are the most pressing issues are three, I would say. One is the destruction of living standards in this country that we've seen underway for the last few decades, and we can see that all around us in the state of Illinois, in these towns, and at the university community. Some of the callers, for example, yesterday to Naomi Jacobson, I think, you know, their questions expressed this concern. Second is the assault on democratic rights through vehicles such as the Patriot Act, the Supreme Court ruling in the 2000 disputed election in which Scalia, writing for the majority, basically, the summation of his argument was that people don't have the right to directly vote for the president, the Democratic Party's attacks on me, their attacks on the Greens and on Nader. These are aspects of an attack on the right to vote. The third is the war in Iraq. And as a matter of fact, the three are all very closely related. The war in Iraq has already cost $200 billion with no end in sight. The United States spends more money, I believe it's than the next 12 military spenders combined. And both the Democratic and Republican parties are promising more of the same. People who try to protest this situation are finding themselves harassed. We saw that at the Republican National Convention, herded up and put in jails. So there's a very close relationship between these three issues, and they're very, very significant here at the local level, too, in the state of Illinois.
Okay. We'll talk more about that. We have another call to include. We'll go to next to an Urbana listener on line number one. Good morning.
Hi. I wanted to know if Mr. Mackeman thought that his presence in the race has forced the two other major candidates to talk about issues that they're not comfortable with. I'll take my response off the air.
Okay. Thanks.
I'm talking about these things, but they're not doing it yet. I think they're still trying to avoid it. I've been to a couple of debates with them, neither one has mentioned the war in Iraq, for example. I think they'd really like to dance around it. Of course, both parties, the Democrats and Republicans, are responsible for the situation we find ourselves in vis-a-vis the war and the erosion of people's living standards, spiraling cost of medications, et cetera. And so it's better for them to not have to talk about it. But we're hoping to force them to address these issues.
Quick follow up on the war in Iraq. In terms of the Illinois State House, what is the relevance of like foreign policy and the war in Iraq if you're a state legislator? I mean, how do you see the connection there between what is essentially a local district in a state legislature and, you know, national, international, and foreign policy?
There are two relationships. One is a direct financial relationship, and I think there have been a number of studies that have pointed this out. That is that with the enormous cost of the war, and the huge weight that the United States military budget has on the federal government. There's not the help coming from the federal to the state to the local level. I mean, there's a domino effect all the way down to the lowest level of government, and governments are experiencing budget shortfalls all the way on down the line. And the second is a political question, and I'm in a party. I represent a party that advances a very clear set of principles, and my Democratic and Republican opponents are not, and they would rather not address these questions. But clearly, the relationship between Iraq and what's going on in these communities, also the fact that we have young people from Illinois fighting and dying in Iraq. I mean, these are very important questions, even if they can't be decided at the level of state governments. It's something that has to be politically fought against. Or politically addressed in the least.
Okay. We have another Banner listener waiting. Let's talk with them. Line number one. Good morning.
Hi. I was wondering if you could talk about health care and how your position on that might differ from the other two candidates. Thank you.
Okay.
Well, we have diametrically opposed positions on the question of health care. Both of my opponents start from the position that there's not enough money to go around, and therefore people should be happy with what they've got. Naomi Jacobson, I listened to her yesterday, and she sort of has this Bill Clinton type, I feel your pain approach, but she's not saying too much. We call for free universal health care for everybody, and we completely reject the idea that there's not enough money. And we see that in the vast amounts of wealth that are being accumulated even now at the top of U.S. society, at the top of Illinois society. For example, if you saw the recent Forbes 400 list, the very wealthy are getting wealthier. Now you need to be a billionaire, practically speaking, to make it on to the Fortune 400. And we're talking about obscene amounts of money. If you add up the fortunes of these 400 people, it's $1 trillion. That's more than the GDP of Canada. It's absurd that there's not enough money. When they say that it's an impossibility, what they mean is that it's a political impossibility. And it's a political impossibility because neither the Democrats or the Republicans want to raise taxes because they don't want to be punished by the financial the captains of finance whom they both work for.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you to talk a little bit more about your principles on health care. A few years ago, when we were actually discussing a possible major overhaul of the health care system in the United States, there was the notion being discussed that health care is a basic right.
Mm-hmm.
That is something like water or, we pay for water, certainly, that, it is essentially a right of being a human being. But we don't really hear that too much anymore. I think we sort of gave up on this sort of restructuring of our thinking on these issues. What would you say about that?
I would say you're exactly right, and I think this is something that for anybody who has basic democratic instincts, it's awful to think that people who are sick and maybe even dying might be turned away or sent to a different hospital because they don't have. Because they're not in a high enough income bracket, basically. And it's a system that's basically saying, if you break it down to brass tacks, it's a system that says a poor person or a working person's life is worth less. We have this problem at the University of Illinois. I'm a graduate employee, we have completely inferior health care to what the administrators and the more highly paid professors have.
Even the academic professionals me.
Yeah. I have a wife and child. I cannot afford to provide them health insurance through the university because it's punitively expensive. The idea that there's not enough money is absurd. James Stuckel, and I'm sure he does a fine job, but he makes $330,000 a year. A lot of the administrators at this university are doing quite well, thank you. It's not correct that there's not enough money.
We have another caller waiting. We'll go next to another Urbana listener on line number one. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I want to address the issue of a living wage. And when the living wage came up in Champaign County, three Republicans did vote for that, joined all but one Democrat. One who did not support it was Deb Finan, because she thought it ought to be left to the free market. But I think it's not only important to have these policies at the county and city levels, but also at the state level. And basically what we would mean at the state level would be that people who earned, who worked full time for firms that did business with the state of Illinois, had subsidies or contracts, would have to pay their employees at least what it costs a family of four to reach the, just the poverty line, which right now is $9.06 an hour. Would you support state legislation mandating a living wage, which would be over the minimum now, which is in the $6 range? It's a third over that state minimum.
Absolutely. Also, I think that to add to what you're saying, though, this is something that has to eventually happen on a national and international scale. What the right wing says that industry will flee to cheaper wages. And I mean, there is a kernel of truth to that. I mean, we can see that now with the movement of factories off to China. And before that to Mexico. Now they're moving from Mexico to China for lower wages. So this is also a national and international problem and something that has to go beyond just the state level. But yes, we have to fight for higher wages for working people in Illinois. It's absurd that, you know, people can work full time at minimum wage and live below official poverty levels, which are, by the way, the official poverty level is ridiculously low.
That's true. Yeah. It was actually formed in the, calculated in the 1950s or 60s, when a third of somebody's income went to housing, and we know it's much more now. And then we have this problem of the working poor, which is also an international problem, as you indicate.
Right.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call. We're almost at our midpoint here with Tom Mackerman. He's a Socialist Equality Party candidate for the 103rd Illinois House District. Taking your questions for the candidate, 333-9455 around Champaign-Urbana. Toll-free elsewhere, 800-222-9455. We have a listener in Charleston next on line number four. Good morning.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes. A couple of questions for your guest. The first would be, what are your views on workers' revolution?
Well, we're a party that advances revolutionary change for society, and we seek to do that first by defending, you know, the U.S. Constitution and basic democratic rights that we've already got. The question of revolution and then boils down to whether or not, you know, working people are going to be allowed to defend themselves, and they have to. And if workers politically organize and they begin to build a political party of their own and break away from the two parties of the financial oligarchy, they're going to find that the ruling elite in this country are going to fight them by whatever means necessary. And so that's what we talk about. We don't talk in terms of revolution about acts of violence, individual acts of violence. That's a completely reactionary outlook. Is that the question you were?
Well, I'm speaking from a historical perspective.
Mm-hmm.
The revolution always came violently. Even the bourgeoisie in 1792 accomplished their revolution through violence.
That's right, but they were in both. I believe you're mentioning the French Revolution.
Yes. Uh-huh.
When you say 1792, or you could use the American Revolution as an example too. Both those revolutions began not as one social class attacking another one, but a social class defending their own interests. The American colonists, for example, began their revolution by defending their rights as Englishmen, not as Americans. It was when King George sent in the Hessians and attacked the colonists that they moved forward and began to call for the universal rights of man, and that we find in the end with Tom Paine, et cetera, and both the American Revolution and
the Marxists and Marx himself wrote that there was no other way that revolution can be accomplished with the power structure at its weakest point, which it's up in the air now how weak the bourgeoisie are and the working class in America. And Marx indicated that the only viable group were the workers that would have the self-interest and the power to overthrow the bourgeoisie only if the army came in with them. And under those conditions, then real change could be effected. The reformist attitude and the De Leonists and all the others who think that you're going to begin at socialism and reform this the monster that has grown to the proportion that it has with bourgeois capitalism. Capitalism cannot be reformed. I mean, it lays down the dogma of self-interest and acquiring wealth by any means necessary, to use your words and Marx's. The process cannot be reformed. It must be overthrown. If I'm reading Marx properly. And any attempt to do it otherwise is going to end in failure, which the old Soviet Union is a perfect example. And when it failed to become international, which is, and you've alluded to that yourself, about the international aspect of the economic and social change, I mean, we can't reform this monster that is now 200 and some years old. 1792, 1892, and then, Marx marked it off in the poverty of sub-philosophy of 300-year increments. And it took that long to overthrow the church and then for the bourgeoisie to take power. Then how is it for political process that I'm gathering that you support, if you can be elected, and then evoke some change, which would, on its face, is impossible.
Okay,
right. Well, I think you're right that in the end you're talking about revolutionary change, but that does not mean that you abstain from the political process, and that's why we're advancing a set of principles here. That it's undoubtedly, you know, the case that there are going to be revolutionary upsurges of the working class, both in the United States and internationally. That's dictated by, you know, the pending economic crisis and these suicidal wars and militarism that the United States is engaging in. And I imagine you're a very well educated caller that your reading of Marx is not incorrect, but that doesn't mean that you sit on your hands. I think that there are very deep democratic feelings among American workers and students, and we need to fight for the gains that have been made in the past as well. That does not mean that we're advocating reformism, that you can put a Band-Aid on these giant problems. It means that you have to take your case to the working class and to the youth and tell them that you have to politically build socialism.
So is, not to say the Graduate Employees Organization is a socialist organization, but is this an example of what you mean by sort of building the working class, or sort of standing up for the rights of the people that you're talking about?
Well, the unions have their place, there's a long history of building unions. But building building a union is not the same thing as building revolutionary change. The unions, take as a starting point sort of a fight to get workers the best they can,
yeah,
given the current circumstances. whereas the socialist fights for a change in the given circumstances. I think a lot of working class people have experienced over the last couple of decades, also a lot of treachery by the upper echelons of the union bureaucracies. A lot of the great strikes of the Midwest at Caterpillar in Illinois, Austin, Hormel in Minnesota were isolated and strangled by the top rungs of the AFL-CIO. And it was the AFL-CIO faced a choice in those situations that was either isolate these workers and let them die on their own, you know, let their struggle be killed off on its own, or else, you know, make a very broad appeal for solidarity, you know, and that sort of situation can escape out of their control. We're not political allies with you know, the top rungs of the AFL-CIO.
Okay. We had a question off the air. Please define working people. Do teachers fall in that category?
Well, objectively speaking, when we talk about working class, we're talking about people who are forced to sell their labor in order to survive. Okay. Objectively, that using that definition, we're talking about the great majority of the world's population. And that would include most teachers, certainly graduate student teachers like myself. There's also, though, that's an objective sort of the way you look at it in terms of iron laws. That's what we talk about when we talk about the working class. But there's also a subjective reality, people who consider themselves working class. And in the past, a lot of teachers thought of themselves as professionals, as middle class, et cetera. And I think that history is doing the lion's share of the work in terms of changing that outlook. Teachers are finding that they really are workers because they face wage cuts all of the time, or else they're not experiencing cost of living increases, and they're forced to fight the way workers fight for their rights.
Okay. Hope that gets to the caller's question. We're talking with Tom Mackeman. He is the Socialist Equality Party candidate for the 103rd Illinois House District. This is the district that is most to Champaign-Urbana here. If you'd like to ask questions of the candidate, you can join us around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Toll-free anywhere else, 800-222-9455. I wanted to follow up on something you mentioned in response to the last caller. I think you used the phrase pending economic crisis.
Uh-huh.
We all worry about things, but I guess I'm wondering what you see coming.
Well, I mean, a lot of the inability people have to see a different way out of this political situation is based on the assumption that the economic conditions in the United States now are possible to go. We could continue under these conditions forever. This is not sustainable. If you read the business section of the newspaper, which is oftentimes very boring, sometimes you do get a sense of there's a growing level of, one might even say, panic among economists, and the debt that the United States is building is not sustainable, and eventually accounts are going to have to be settled. The eruption of U.S. militarism that we're experiencing now just exasperates this, and we're finding that it's probably. In an economic sense, financially unviable, that the United States can continue on this path. The question is how long and when things are going to fall through. The United States and China both have very weak economic, I shouldn't say weak, but unstable economic conditions right now. And if either were to experience a problem, we could have a very large worldwide economic problem ensuing.
Okay. Well, we have a couple calls to talk with. Let's go next to another Champaign listener, line number one. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Yes. Hi, Tom. I was wondering whether you could have some comments and insights on the discourse which employs charges of anti-Semitism on the left, and what your sort of historical and current analysis of that charge is in relation
Okay.
Okay. The question was charges of anti-Semitism against the left. We lost the caller. So I think that's what he was asking.
Right.
I think that this is a very, very common situation for people who are an opponent of the expansionist policies of Israel in the Middle East and its brutal repression of the Palestinian people. When you talk about that, it's very frequent. We see this on the going on all the time on the pages of the Daily Illini, that people who try to defend the Palestinian people's basic right to existence are accused of anti-Semitism. I think that this is clearly a bankrupt argument. There are these people who advance these charges are very well organized. They're keeping a blacklist of professors who I wouldn't even say all of these professors that make the blacklist are out and out supporters of the Palestinian cause. They're just people who try to be objective about it. Daniel Pipes and his coterie try to keep a blacklist to frighten these professors, basically. However, when you see the arguments that these people make, they're so clearly hollow and bankrupt. I think that, you know, more and more people are seeing through it. I hope that answered the question.
Okay. Another caller in Urbana, next, line number two. Good morning.
Hi. Mm-hmm. Good morning. I was wondering if what locally you would do regarding the situation for accessibility for health care for poor working poor people who are newly on Medicaid but can't be seen because Carl and Christy no longer accept new Medicaid patients. Mm-hmm. How would you handle that locally?
Well, I would fight for the if you send me to Springfield, I would fight for the greatest accessibility possible. I'm sure that I would be among all of the representatives in Springfield, the most aggressive defender of the right to health care and accessibility. And I would fight for these issues locally in a way that candidates and parties who are tied in one way or another to the insurance industry and the HMOs are incapable of doing. Having said that, again, we have to understand that we're talking about a very large-scale problem, and what is needed is basic political change. And we're intervening in this election precisely in order to build a party, a mass party that advances the interests of working people, including the right to health care. This is one of I think that health care is becoming one of the most pressing issues facing working people in this country, and we have to fight for it, and we have to understand, however, that you can't do that through these two parties that we have now. We have to build a new party, a party of working people that's going to represent its interests. But in terms of the local question, yes, I would definitely fight for an expansion of accessibility.
Okay, because I know Francis Nelson is so, you know, everybody's getting shunted there, mm-hmm. and they're just overworked, overstrained, and they don't have the facilities or the staff. And it's one thing to say, well, let's get more tax money to help Francis Nelson, but you're still not curing the problem.
That's a very, very good point. My campaign manager is a nurse at Provena, and he has a lot of these stories for me of people who have trouble with Carl, I think, in particular. Being shipped off to other places. And I've heard some of these stories myself since I've been campaigning. I've heard the story of a diabetic woman who, because she couldn't get into the hospital and under normal circumstances, she had to get herself sick enough to be sent into the ER. That was the only way her Medicare would be taken. I mean, this is a criminal system, and it absolutely has to be changed.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call. How do you, as you put it, fight for access to health care? Are there specific things that you would like to do?
Given the circumstances that we have, you know, you can't say that there's the political will to have anything done. This is what, when, for example, the caller yesterday to Naomi Jacobson pointed out that her monthly medication costs had gone from $130 to $460 in a month. Mm-hmm. For somebody who, an elderly person who's on a fixed income, this is terrible. Naomi Jacobson had, you know, nothing to say about that. And it's not because, you know, it's not in the first place there's some truth to what she says when she says, you know, or when her and Deb Finan are honest and they say, well, they put up their hands and they say, well, hard choices must be made. But what I'm arguing is that this predicament that we're in of a chronic budget crisis in Illinois is the result of definite political decisions, right? It's not that there's no money. It's that there's not a political will to make these things available to people. And so, I mean, obviously, as one person in Springfield, I'm not going to be able to, you know, Mr. Smith goes to Washington and shake things up. But I will fight for the interests of working people. And if I'm sent to Springfield, obviously, this is going to have an enormous impact politically. And we're going to be advancing the cause of building the mass party of the working class that is going to take care of these issues.
Okay. We have just about 10 minutes left with our guest, Tom Mackeman. He is the Socialist Equality Party candidate for the 103rd Illinois House District. He will be on the ballot in November, and we're talking with him about a variety of issues. If you'd like to join us in the time remaining, the number around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Toll-free elsewhere, 800-222-9455. A couple of the issues that sort of relate to what we've been talking about, there's some discussion of, you know, taxation and the tax structure. And I'm wondering if you have some particular thoughts. There is some, in terms of school funding, there is this bill, House Bill 750, which would lower property taxes and raise income taxes so that there is more equitable funding throughout the state of Illinois. That's one idea on the table. It's a little bit more complicated than that, but that's the basic idea. And in general, I mean, just to throw it open, do you have particular thoughts about the tax system and what could be done to, you know, make things better for the people of the state, the working people that, you'd like to represent, and, you know, how would you address that?
I'd like to begin by pointing to the difference between me and my two competitors on this subject. Naomi Jacobson and runs very proudly on a no-new tax pledge that's prominent in all of her appearances and in her campaign literature. And this may sound good to a lot of middle-income people who are taxed too much as it is. This is true. But in reality, this is a political argument that appeals to the wealthiest people in Illinois. This flat tax we have in Illinois is unjust. It's a very regressive tax policy. And it's not that wealthy people don't have the money to pay a fair share in taxes. Again, you could point to this Forbes 400 list. I mean, wealthy people are getting wealthier all the time. We need to have a progressive income tax in Illinois. And the money is not going to come from nowhere. You know, you have to have a fiscal policy that corresponds to the level of the problem. If you're serious about fixing schools or talking about fixing health care, then you absolutely have to talk about raising income taxes on Illinois' largest businesses and its wealthiest citizens. And that my two opponents are unwilling to talk about that shows that really people only have two choices in this election. They can vote for one or the other party of big business, or they can vote for me.
Okay. A couple callers waiting. We'll go next to an Urbana listener on line number one. Good morning.
Hi. I'm really enjoying the show. I had a question as to whether there were certain laws, maybe anything in the criminal code that you feel targets lower income people and what you would do to change some of those. I know this is very vague, but I didn't know if there's anything you have in mind. I have to go to work, so I'll listen to your message as I'm getting ready to go.
Okay.
Bye.
Well, I mean, I think in a basic sense, probably a great deal of our legal codes are, you know, directed at policing low-income working-class people. Just off the top of my head, for example, the war on drugs, the so-called war on drugs, it's a little bit out of vogue now that we have the war on terrorism, but the war on drugs resulted in the criminalization of a very large percentage of the African American population, which is really the most oppressed section of the American working class, together with the so-called illegal immigrants, these people being swept up and put in jail for nonviolent offenses is, you know, it's absurd. You can't explain it except by saying that this is a way of policing the whole working class. Obviously, this is a problem for the youth too. Well, that's just one issue off the top of my head. But I think the caller is right. A lot of the laws are in place to oppress working people.
Another caller on line number two in Champaign. Good morning.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question. I take the view that the local issues are very much tied in with national and international dimension. And in that connection, I would like to ask the candidate what his views are on the, or were on the presidential debate yesterday with respect to the political and economic interests that were represented in that discussion about the war in Iraq.
Okay. I was unable to watch it, I have to confess, because my wife and I had tickets to show long before the debate was scheduled. But I have read a lot about it. And, you know, basically you've got a situation now where over the last couple weeks, John Kerry, for the first time since the early phases of the Democratic nomination process, has been attacking the decision to go to war in Iraq, and the bitterness between the two parties is really interesting here, because what the Republicans are doing is basically suggesting that this is tantamount to treason to criticize the decision, you know, the absurd decision to go to war. And since there were no weapons of mass destruction, no connection to al-Qaeda, we know all of this stuff now. And on the other hand, if it's true what Kerry is saying, you know, that we went under false pretenses, then Bush and the entire administration are war criminals, because according to the precedents established at the Nuremberg trials, you can't conduct a war of aggression under false pretenses. People need to be careful of Kerry on this score, because you know, he's promising to continue the occupation. As he's put it many times in the past, defeat is not an option. What he means by that, of course, is that hundreds of billions of dollars more, thousands of American lives lost, and tens of thousands of Iraqis. And if anybody, I don't know if anybody noticed what Barack Obama had to say in the Chicago Tribune last week, potentially the escalation to Iran. Obama called for missile strikes on Iran's supposed nuclear weapons project. There's no evidence of it, of anything. I mean, it's very, very similar to the lies that were used to in the lead up to the war in Iraq. So these are the bipartisan policies of the Democrats and Republicans.
Let me get to the caller's question. I think the caller has hung up. Okay, well, we have just about 5 minutes left, 4 or 5 minutes left, with our guest Tom Ackerman, Socialist Equality Party candidate for the 103rd Illinois House District. If someone wants to call real quick, we'll get you in, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. One of the issues that you know, you're probably very acquainted with is you know, the University of Illinois, the fact that funding has been cut for a couple of years, flat for yet a third year, and the prospects for the next year don't really look very good. A lot of people in the 103rd District depend on the University of Illinois, work at the University of Illinois, study here. What would you say you could do to address the situation with higher education, both here at the U of I and maybe throughout the state?
This is closely related to the question of health care, high school education, et cetera. We need to put social needs above the accumulation of private profit. And if, you know, I'm sent to Springfield, I'm going to fight for funding as best as I can, given the current circumstances. But people need to understand that we have to build a political tool. Working people have to build a political tool that can advance social needs above private profit. And that's why we're intervening in this election, to lay the groundwork for the building of just such a party. Again, listening to Naomi Jacobson yesterday, I'm sure she's sincere in her efforts to get funding for the university. But if you're running on a no new tax pledge, it's not a very tenable position. And actually, she doesn't have much of a record to run on. As you pointed out, things have been pretty bad for the last couple of years, barely getting any more money. And undergraduates, by the way, the skyrocketing tuition, it's really obscene. It's not as if education is getting that much better year by year. And so I think undergraduates need to really study this situation and think very deeply about it, and think about what needs to be done to break out of break out of this straitjacket of the two-party system, with where both politicians will tell you that there's just not enough money.
Okay. Another issue that came up with the other candidates, and I'll raise it with you just to, you know, sort of level the playing field and make sure we talk about some of the same issues. Same-sex marriage, domestic partnerships. Do you have a particular position on that?
We would be in favor of people's right to have civil unions, and I think a lot of the way that the debate is framed is a bit of a misnomer, because people are saying that it's a violation of church and state if you allow a same-sex marriage to be married in a church. In fact, the violation is the other way around. I mean, if there's a church that wants to marry a same-sex couple, the government has no right to tell them that they can't. But we have to ensure that the civil union is allowed. I think that people need to realize that, you know, there are so many children growing up in society that have broken homes, or, you know, even kids growing up in orphanages and foster homes. If there are two adults, you know, that love each other and want to have kids, I think that that's a good thing. It's not a bad thing.
We're at the end of our time. We're going to have to stop and thank the candidate for his time. And also, is there a website and other information you'd like to give out for people that they'd like to contact you or find out more?
Right. If you're interested in contacting me, you can email me at tmackaman@yahoo.com. That's M-A-C-K-A-M-A-N, T. Mackaman. And our website is the World Socialist website. That's wsws.org. And there's a link on there to the various campaigns that we're running.
Okay. Very good. Our guest has been Tom Mackaman, and he is the Socialist Equality Party candidate for the 103rd Illinois House District. And the third candidate that we've interviewed this week, all three candidates in the running, will be on the ballot and have been on the show this week. And I want to mention again, if you'd like to compare and contrast the candidates, you can go back and listen to these interviews. They are on our website, will.uiuc.edu/election2004. You'll find the archives of the interviews available there. And that hopefully will help your decision making this November. And Tom Mackaman, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Focus 580 is made possible in part by a grant from the Art Mart in the Lincoln Square Mall, Urbana. The Art Mart is pleased to support public radio in East Central Illinois. Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Owens Funeral Home at the corner of Elm and University in Champaign, locally owned and operated and serving families since 1925. Owens Funeral Home invites you to join them in supporting public radio.
That's it for this hour, Focus 580. We'll be back in just a few minutes talking with Eboo Patel, Executive Director of the Interfaith Youth Corps of Chicago.